Yeah, so just a small question, since you mentioned inhibitors. Does that only inhibit restart and shutdown, or does it also apply to suspend?
Not to everything, all the inhibitors. All inhibitors, so all the inhibitors that they go in these ports, we have this new more intuitive, according to me, way of doing that. So suspend as well, yes.
But to add to this, inhibitors are of different types, right? So it applies to the, I mean, how you call the inhibitor also matters. And this is, in a way, a break of the, like, the Unix root is God mode.
And we like breaking Unix.
Yeah, so you were mentioning that some significant feature was implemented by an Outreachy contributor. Can you share a little bit about that? Which feature was implemented? How was the relationship in general with the contributor? How did it go?
So the feature that we mentioned is Blue Screen of Death. It's a thing where if in early boot the system crashes, instead of displaying nothing or maybe a little bit of logs, it shows a screen that says, well, in a graphical way, your machine crashed. Here is a QR code you can scan to get more information. And the relationship. So working with new people is always hard, and it does, you know, like for outreach interns, it's kind of the same. It's a bit of a overhead for us, but I think it's satisfying to have new contributors and to introduce new people to the project.
It was actually really nice working with the contributor in this case. It was very enthusiastic. That was great. Just wanted to mention, the Blue Screen of Death stuff, it's triggered by simply logging at a really high log level. That basically, yeah, if any component of the boot logs at emergency level or something like this, then it will, then it will trigger the thing, right? And you have to be privileged, because otherwise, unprivileged stuff could misuse this.
And to add to the BSOD stuff, so it currently only shows the entry that triggered the BSOD, and I think we should just do extend it to show the last few logs, just like what kernel's doing. It might make QR code larger, but I think it's necessary so that you get more context on the error.
Thank you. Yes, and I want to add on process. We've been working with Outreachy for, I think, 3 years now. I think we had two interns. The year before, there was the Hibernate on low battery thing. So I think the hardest part for us is that, I don't know if you're familiar with how Outreachy works, you're supposed to do an initial interview period, so where you have on your repository beginner's tasks that prospective applicants can pick and do to show that, you know, they can work on in the language you use and in the technology that you use. And that is what we struggle most with, I think, because it's really hard to have this list of things that, yes, they are doable, but they don't get done already when these people show up. So I think that is the thing we struggle most with. But other than that, yeah, it works well, I think.
And just as a brief follow-up, so, and the initial ramp-up of the contributor was relatively straightforward, or did you have to do a lot of work to get them to start, essentially?
Can you repeat, that? Please?
Yes, so the question is, how was the initial ramp-up of this contributor? Did they immediately manage to work properly, or did you have to do a lot of hand-holding, essentially?
I think they send us really good candidates, and given we have this... So the good thing about this selection process where they have to contribute is that you do the initial ramp-up before the project, the actual internship begins, because they already have to, you know... code and submit pull requests, they have to work, they have to run the MKUs IVMs with the new version they're working on, for example. So when the internship starts, there's already a lot of work already done, which is kind of good in that way.
Yesterday you asked me a question if there is anything you could help us with our work. I kind of forgot, and today a thing appeared to me, a feature request, because this is what we from time to time struggle with. Could systemd detect early when it starts if kernel supports all the features it needs. I know kernel because we, from time to time, we take different kernel dev configs built for a new board or something, and systemd crashes. And it's like, you know, office knowledge. Now take this dev config and turn this on and this off and so on and so on. And it's frustrating to not to know what happened very early, probably earlier than this system, the blue screen of dev can function.
I mean, we document this nowadays quite extensively in the README, right? Like it lists all the config X, config Y, config and so on that you have to turn on. But this is to some degree even we cannot answer that very early on because many of the things that we want we only use much later. Like I don't know, in UDEV will recognize this, but not PID1 yet. Or I don't know, we need some functionality for Krypton role that you have the DM whatever. So I don't think we can say this really early on. Or the stuff that we could say really early on is the stuff that hopefully in most cases you would probably... Well, okay, I mean, I'm coming from a different position there because, I mean, to me some things are clear. Like, for example, that C groups needs to be turned on. I don't need to think about this, but I understand that this might not be the common baseline that everybody is on. So, I don't know, we can certainly make better error messages, right? Like, but the thing is, like, we never run into them, right? So we don't know about them because we never see them. So, I don't know, if you... find a situation where you turn off some option in the kernel accidentally and then realize it doesn't boot and you saw some cryptic error message that made no sense to you and then you figured out this is about it, just file a bug and we'll like we actually have a specific label on GitHub that we put on things like this needs better error message so that that things become more discoverable. But I would really like to treat it like that, right? Like, so instead of us checking for kernel features, I would ask to always just use the kernel features and make sure that when we realize they aren't there, we log about them. Either gracefully, because we can continue we don't strictly need them, or fatally, and then with a clear error message.
If I remember correctly, the problem we had like 2 weeks ago was because some of the early API file systems was unavailable and there was no clear message which one.
File a bug. This sounds like something where we should just improve the error message.
Yes, yeah, because...
We fix things like this all the time. And
Okay. I'll pass it on to colleagues. Thank you.
So while the mic is being delivered, we forgot to do a round of introductions. I mean, we did, but not on that side. So you and Mike, can you say a short word about yourselves?
Okay. I'm Yu Watanabe. I'm mostly working on NetworkD and JohnWD and UDevD, and I'm working on at Red Hat.
So I'm Mike. I've been working with SystemDF for almost 2 years now. I'm from Sydney High, and now I moved to Germany. I can do all sorts of social and conference works in real life, and I think it's wonderful. And I like the Linux version on TPM, but I never bothered to look into the internals to actually develop thing. I'm mostly focused still on like PID1 and login the all the basics user space stuff.
Oh, and I'm Leonard.
Yeah, who's the guy in the middle? My question is, where do you guys see NetworkD ending up in the Linux ecosystem? Do we see it replacing on desktop network manager or being the de facto standard, or are you going to leave that up to distros?
Where do we see NetworkD will replace, I mean, will become the, like the desktop network manager?
Because it's the year of the Linux desktop.
So before you answer, from my point of view, NetworkD has very good ideas, and I really like how it is like deploying NetworkD and keeping it on a server is nice. And some of the concepts have been flowing, for example, into Network Manager. And it's much easier to configure it using files now than it used to be. I don't know. That's part of the answer.
So, you know, right now, like all the hyperscalers and stuff, it's all Network D stuff, right? Like what isn't the Network D world is desktops. So, I think the main missing part is that we have a sane IPC API, and this is partially the problem was that Dbus is only available during late boot, right? It's like the network manager people have the same problem. They came up with things that I think are crazy, that they actually run Dbus now in NRD and things like this. But things are getting better there, I like, because, you know, I have this other talk about Varlink, and it kind of
I'm excited for Varlink.
I don't know, like, I think we should add that. But then, you know, just having the IPC is one thing, actually getting the desktops to actually integrate is a completely different one. Also, they generally focus on different technology, like Wi-Fi is a lot more important on desktops than it happens to be on servers. So we would need some integration there. But I don't know, like, I don't think it's... I think we have a good chance to win that thing too, but you know, from my personal background, this is not like I don't know. Like I work for a hyperscaler. This is where our stuff is used, and I don't know. Like, but I would like to see it.
I'd like to know the audience who use the NetworkD on your laptop. Please hand. Oh, quite many. So if there is a GUI tool, then do you want to NetworkD on your laptop? No?
Well, sir, by the way, just to mention this, like I, on my laptop, run NetworkD and Network Manager side by side. I use NetworkD for all the stuff like container and spawn, VM spawn networking, and I use Network Manager for the Wi-Fi, so. Mm.
That doesn't count.
All or nothing. Thank you.
Other questions?
Okay, maybe a question for Mike.
Not really a question, but more of a suggestion, because it struck me that during the earlier talk, you mentioned that you have a bit of a lapse in the QA, or rather a gap in the QA, when it comes to non-x86 architectures. As it happened yesterday, I was at the talk about BPF trace, and they were talking about their CI setup in order to be able to test against multiple architectures. And they have a tool for that, wrapping QEMU, obviously, called VMTest. That might be something you want to look into, because they also have a GitHub Actions-based CI setup.
So we could do cross-architecture QEMU. The problem is that it's horrendously slow. So our tests take... You know, when you have KVM, it takes half an hour for a full run on a good day, longer sometimes. If you go cross-architecture without KVM, it takes the full day. It doesn't work, right? That's the problem. We need resources or money or sponsorship for native runners for other architectures. That's what we really need.
Also, does that work recursively? Because many of our tests do spawn VMs, right? Like when we always had trouble with running x86 VMs inside of x86 VMs on the CIs. I'm not sure if you actually start emulating things, if you're going to be happy there. I don't know. But it's mostly like if somebody wants to contribute their workforce and making a CI run like this, we would, of course, be very welcome and would hook it up and be happy and look at the CI. We actually try to look at the CI all the time.
In general, the reliability of the CI is a huge problem. I mean, like for most people, but for us, it's reliability and introspectability of the CI failures.
Another thing, network related, not directly to NetworkD, but rather ResolveD. Will ResolveD support some API to publish MDNS entries? Because as far as I know, now you need to drop files in etc, and there is no way to control it dynamically like Avahi. And well, I'd love to see Resolve-D replace Avahi because it seems like simpler, better, and stuff.
So I have a PR outstanding that does something, not that, but kind of related to it, which is like this ability that you can define additional scopes where we send requests to, and that in a dynamic way, so that an IPC client can come via Varlink and say, basically, I want to define for a moment the scope now, which is a DNS server, a set of DNS servers and search domains. And then it's going to be included in the routing and things like this. But related to this, I try to think about that precise problem because I want it not only for MDNS, I want it also for local DNS records because we have something like MachineD, for example, that registers DNS records, like makes local VMs resolvable. And even though that's a local thing and not a network-facing part, it's kind of the same semantics, right? Like you want to install a couple of resource records, either that they're also visible to others or that they're visible locally. Let's just say I started working on it in a distant way. I would like to see that. And it's probably going to be Varlink based because it has this nice thing that we can then basically give you, like the connection would be the object that tracks this thing, so you actually have a nice life cycle and things like
that. Send us a PR.
So no more questions?
Other questions?
So Luca like briefly mentioned, you don't have hardware because sponsorship, funding, whatever. So what would you do if you had kind of like infinite funding for the systemd project?
We go on holiday all the time. No, so I mean, I think so on GitHub, you can buy more runners. Right now we get sponsorship from GitHub and Microsoft. We get additional resources than you would get on a normal open source project, and we are very grateful for that. With infinite resources, yeah, we would definitely, and not just a finite amount, but ongoing income, we would be able to sponsor and buy more runners. And I think there are now ARM64 runners as well, but again, you have to pay for those, I think. So this kind of stuff we would do. And in parallel, on one of the slides, we have done contracting work, so we will continue to use contractors to do the stuff that is less exciting but needs done. So I think these are the two things we would focus on. I don't know, other ideas here?
I would even say it in a different way. So the contracting work can be done if you can scope out something that is like a thing, and all the glue stuff would be hard to do as contractor work. For this, we need like people who are in the project all the time. So I wouldn't do this split of it, but exciting and unexciting. I think it's a different thing.
Other ideas? Infinite money? So when can we expect the check? Other questions?
If there's none, maybe a question for Mike. So you're the only one up there who's not working for a big company. So how's your experience have been, and where do you want to take systemd?
I'm not sure from which perspective I'd be answering this. Like, I value my current independence so that I'm not driven by some specific requirement from the company, but from purely technical view. But I don't know. This might change in the future. I don't know. And yes, I. Nobody pays me for it, but I just enjoy this. So, like, I've been continuously doing this for 2 years, so that won't be a problem for me.
Other questions? How much time do we have?
5 more minutes until Leonard's talk.
Oops.
Is there anything the systemd project would like to see distributions do different when integrating systemd? Any pain points? Any?
Well, one of the things that we discussed last week was pain points in the kernel. So little bits, like for example, ButterFS not supporting offline creation of subvolumes, and ButterFS not supporting offline and compression, which, I mean, it's not directly a kernel feature, but it's done by the same people. And I don't know, like we have this huge UI, huge list of features on the UAPI website, the kernel wish list. So that's on one side, and on the other side, in libraries, well, strict backwards compatibility in libraries so that things don't break. That would be my list.
I have two things. The first one is in the upstream CI, we saw on the slide, we cover Debian, Ubuntu, CentOS, Arch, SUSE, Fedora. We would like more distributions. Like there's more than the main generalist distributions out there. All you need to do is to make your distribution image buildable with MKOSI, and if you are package-based, that's it usually trivial. If you are RPM, it's super easy. Or talk with Dan or with Jörg there, and they'll help you out. But if you do that, and then you send us upstream PR to do to enable this, then we can give you test coverage directly upstream before we do releases. Because distributions are different, and we find issues on Ubuntu that are not there on Fedora, and vice versa. So if you send us this integration, then we will test your distro for you before we do releases. So you will have less trouble when we do a release and you have to integrate it. But you need to help us and do the work, and it's ongoing work. Like MKOSI makes it easier, but it's still a bit of ongoing work, and we need some commitment there. The second thing I will say is that one thing that some distributions do well and some less well is the subdivision into packaging. So we are trying to build these small init RDs now from packages in MKOSI, and we would really like to be able to split up, to have the systemd packages and other packages at a more granular level for your basic system stuff, so that we can build smaller init RDs and extensions on top of that. And that is something, again, the distribution folks into that. For example, this is anathema to Arch. Like on Arch, you package everything in a single package, right?
Yeah, so it's I actually don't want that in Arch, but if this yeah. is the way forward, it's the way forward.
Oh, and I think it would be great if distributions would do hermetic slash user, if we can find agreement there. Some distributions started doing the SUSE, and yesterday we heard about in one of the Lightning talks that Debian, there's work ongoing. I think it would be lovely if Fedora would do the same thing, because in the long run, I mean, we have no illusions, not a short-time project, but I think in a long-term project, it would be really great if the distributions would start doing this. And regarding the whole CI discussion and the infinite money thing, I think it's not so much about short-term money. It's about long-term support for the CIs, right? Like, this is something that I really would like to underline. Nobody of us is helped if we have some maintainer who comes and sets up a CI system and then vanishes, because CIs are fragile beasts. So we need continuous support so that somebody looks after this. And this is like, for example, from the Red Hat side, we have František, who's awesome for these things, and he just keeps looking about this year after year to keep it working. Without this, the CI would be garbage for us, right? So it's not about short-time stuff. It's not about setting up this once. It's a continuous thing and commitment, and that kind of makes it hard for people. I understand that, but we need this.
So we are out of time. Thank you for the questions.
Thank you.
Let's move on.